Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri, and blessings Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, March 14th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi, and here are our top stories this evening. Zimbabwe People First Party, led by former Vice President Joyce Mujuru, condemns political violence following an attack by suspected ZANU-PF activists.
We don't expect to have any organization, be it ZANU, MDC or so, attacking us, because we always believe that the solution to Zimbabwe's problem is not in mounting violence.
Heads of church denominations are planning to hold a meeting with President Mugabe as the social, economic and political situation degenerates in the country.
The Executive Committee of the Zimbabwe Heads of Christian Denominations has been tasked actually to make the necessary appointments, so it's with immediate effect.
And ZIFA President Philip Chiyangwa says the net is closing in on suspects in the alleged match-fixing scandal in Zimbabwe.
Certainly the matter is now in political. I'm sure they're running for their deal as we speak. The last time the whole Asia gate was some matches played in Asia and so forth and so forth. It was not about local matches.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. The newly launched Zimbabwe People First Party, led by former Vice President Joyce Mujuru, says it is disturbed that political violence is resurfacing in the country after its rally in Harare's Glenview suburb at the weekend was disrupted by suspected ZANU-PF youths. The suspected ZANU-PF youths allegedly threw stones at people attending the Zimbabwe People First rally, injuring four of them. Acting party spokesperson Rugare Gumbo says his party condemns all forms of violence perpetrated by any political party. This comes barely a week after some MDCT youths were also attacked by suspected ZANU-PF members in Harare's Mbare and Kuwadzana suburbs. Gumbo tells Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri that police should be commended for the manner they swiftly restored order at the party rally.
It was unfortunate in the sense that we are a peaceful organization. We always preach peace and we want things to be done in an orderly fashion. We don't expect to have any organization, be it ZANU, MDC or so, attacking us, because we always believe that the solution to Zimbabwe's problem is not in mounting violence, intimidation, threats and so on. The solution is to discuss amongst ourselves how best we can acquit ourselves in the light of the terrible situation that we are facing.
When you were still part of ZANU-PF, opposition parties used to accuse ZANU-PF of violence, but you were dismissing those allegations. What are you saying now, after your members were allegedly attacked by the same party that you used to defend?
The situation depends on the kind of reports that you get. Sometimes when you are right up there, you are not given the correct information. Of course, there are cases where we saw MDC people being beaten up, which did augur well, but now that we are out, we can see the mistakes that happened.
That was Rugare Gumbo, interim spokesperson of the opposition Zimbabwe People First Party, speaking there with Studio 7. Harare resident and opposition MDCT member Zomhlaba Mbanje tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri the ZANU-PF government must be held accountable for any political violence, which he fears may be worse than the 2008 violence if left unchecked.
We are looking at a very serious situation ahead of us. Looking at the coming elections in 2018, we seem to have a situation that is more than the 2008-2007 situation. So if somebody whom we are looking at, because it's the government that should stop all this, but it's the government that is actually arming itself with a very destroying weight. So we should all look for a very bloody election in 2018.
How best can this be avoided, Ms. Timbanje?
Like what I said, the government should stop this. And if the government doesn't act fast, of which I don't see it doing it, because it's a sort of a trick that they are trying to make so that the other parties and the people will be very, very, very afraid of them, and then they will, at the end, maybe win the elections, of which I can say the elections will not be for everybody, but for ZANU-PF only.
That was Harare resident and MDCT opposition member Zomhlaba Mbanje speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. Meanwhile, opposition Transform Zimbabwe party claimed today that six of its youth members in Chitungwiza were on Sunday abducted and tortured by suspected ZANU-PF members, police and members of the Zimbabwe National Army. In a statement, the party claimed that the six were forced to write forced statements denouncing their party before they were set free. The incident was reported at Makoni Police Station. Studio 7 failed to reach the police and ZANU-PF chairperson Simon Kayamoyo for a comment on this issue. Heads of Christian denominations who have released a communique titled "The Zimbabwe We Want, Taking the Process Forward," chronicling the deteriorating situation in the country, have set up a committee to meet President Mugabe and opposition leaders to address the deepening political, economic, and social crisis. The hard-hitting communique calls for leadership renewal across the board and for increased political accountability. The church leaders say deficiency in leadership governance and leadership succession issues have resulted in lack of direction, policy inconsistencies, stagnation, and absence of political will to tackle current challenges. The churches that authorized the communique are the Evangelical Fellowship of Zimbabwe, the Zimbabwe Council of Churches, Zimbabwe Catholic Bishops' Conference, and Union for Development of Apostolic Churches in Zimbabwe. The last such communique was released by the same churches in 2006. The four church mother bodies vowed that they commit to be more audible, visible, and consistent on national issues. Human rights groups have welcomed the communique, saying politicians can ignore church leaders at their own peril. Father Frederick Chiromba, who's also the Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Catholic Bishop Conference, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the churches have been motivated to release the communique by the country's worsening crisis.
In coming to 2016, where we begin to see the deteriorating situation in the country, at the same time, the churches realize that the solutions lie already, you know, in what the churches actually said in 2006. And that is why we have sort of speeded up, you know, that process of moving this the Zimbabwe want forward, to just to remind the nation of what we said earlier and what can help.
When you say the situation is deteriorated, what are you referring to here?
The document actually lists the challenges that the nation is facing. This is actually ongoing because at the moment, at least the arms of the document speaks of lack of a shared national vision and values, you know, where you see political parties actually each one vying for its own survival, you know, at the expense of the nation. Secondly, the document also speaks of insufficient implementation and adherence to the 2013 Constitution.
But any plans to meet with the country's political leadership?
Yes, in fact, that's the intention of the churches, actually, to engage the political leadership on these issues and actually persuade them then to act and resolve these challenges.
And when is this likely to happen?
The Executive Committee of the Zimbabwe Heads of Christian Denominations has been tasked actually to make the necessary appointments, so it's with immediate effect.
And that was Father Frederick Shiromba, Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Catholic Bishops Conference, speaking there with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. The Bulawayo City Council has assured residents that it will not introduce water rationing despite fears of water shortages due to the drought brought by the El Nino phenomenon. The residents held a meeting with local authority representatives recently in which they expressed worry over perennial water wars. Our correspondent Aurai Shava brings us more.
Concern over the city's water supplies was among the foremost issues raised at a meeting organized by Bulawayo Progressive Residents Association, attended by residents and council officials. Some of the residents who attended the meeting said they wanted council to keep them informed about the water supply situation given the drought the country is facing. Pumula South resident Dokas Mpofu told Studio 7 that despite the fact that the country's second biggest city is located in a more arid area than other cities, council is doing a good job in being able to provide clean water regularly. She, however, echoed similar sentiments that council has to keep residents abreast over measures that it is taking to avert any serious water shortage.
We would like to know from the city council what measures they are taking since we haven't received much rains as we had expected this year. We want them to tell us whether we have enough water to sustain us through this year.
Mayor Moyo told Studio 7 that council is not going to resort to closing water supplies to residents as a measure to conserve water. Moyo said the city's dams are currently 44% full, noting that the water could last up to the next rainy season. In previous years, council has, under similar circumstances, introduced water shedding up to 4 days a week, but Moyo said this had created its own problems, including huge costs incurred in rehabilitating pipes that burst when water supplies are restored.
Prudence says don't repeat the same mistake. So this time we are saying we have 22-month supply of water. Let's supply water without shedding for the entire year. And then we avoid the best that occurred last time.
Moyo said council is embarking on a project to install a pipeline and pumps so that water can be drawn from boreholes in Epping Forest on the outskirts of the city. The project, which the mayor said is a short-term measure to augment the city's water supplies, is expected to be completed before year-end at a cost of about $5 million. $3 million has so far been raised from members of the public through levies.
There are boreholes at Epping Forest, and then we also have the reservoirs at Rochester. All that is required is a pipe connecting those boreholes to Rochester and probably fitting some pumps to pump the water to Rochester. We think this is a short-term solution.
Moyo also said council is rehabilitating some of the boreholes that were no longer working at the Nyamandlovu Aquifer in order to help increase supplies. Moyo revealed that individual and other ratepayers owe council a total of $117 million, which is $4 million more than council's 2016 budget of $113 million. The mayor urged ratepayers to honor their obligations, saying doing so would ensure that council successfully delivers the required services. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shava.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up, A Zimbabwean struggles with a kidney ailment as he can't access required medical treatment. But first, a look at regional and international news. In Ivory Coast, Sunday's deadly attack on beachgoers outside the commercial capital Abidjan was the country's first real brush with terrorism. The attack killed 14 civilians and left 22 wounded. U.S. presidential candidates are looking ahead to Tuesday when five delegate-rich states hold their primary elections, with the rest of the field blaming Republican frontrunner Donald Trump for the violence that has erupted at his rallies. The primaries in Florida, Ohio, Illinois, Missouri, and North Carolina are particularly important for Trump's opponents, who want to prevent him from grabbing a potentially insurmountable lead. But Trump denied that his campaign has provoked violence, telling a crowd in Bloomington, Illinois, Sunday that he wants peace and not trouble. An American member of Islamic State has surrendered to Kurdish Peshmerga forces in northern Iraq near the town of Sinjar. Sabaz Hama Amin, a Kurdish Peshmerga commander in Iraq, told VOA his forces noticed the suspect while on patrol Monday. And Brazilian police say some 3 million people across the country took to the streets yesterday demanding the ouster of President Dilma Rousseff. Some kidney patients have urged the government to make medication and dialysis treatment more affordable as the disease continues to affect more people. Kidney patient Jabulani Nyati says he has lived with the disease for 27 years, but has of late been failing to access his medication due to the country's deteriorating economy and rising drug costs. Nyati tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye that he has to miss some dosages as his treatment requires him to have at least $1,000 per month, which at times he's unable to raise.
With this problem for the past 27 years, I'm now 58.
How did the problem start?
The doctors were saying it was due to hypertension.
How did you discover that you had kidney problems? What were the symptoms?
I was feeling weak most of the time, but lots of appetite. I couldn't eat for days and ends. And at night, I could have some dreams.
After seeing those symptoms, how long did it take you to go to the doctor?
2 weeks to go to the doctor and be diagnosed, because they carried a few tests before I was admitted to the program.
So what course of action are you on now? What did the doctor advise you to do after you went to see them? Are you taking any medication? What is the situation with you right now?
Yes, I do take medication for hypertension and for calcium, because in Israel, when you have dialysis, you tend to use calcium. I tend to use vital nutrients again. Those are also needed during the process. I also need the erythropoietin and the venoplast, because you tend to use so many blood cells. You are always anemic.
You talked about dialysis. Are you now on dialysis, and how many times do you go to get dialysis?
I go for dialysis twice a week for 5 hours per session.
Where is this done? And is it for free or do you have to pay?
You pay, because there's no medication in public hospital, so you have to get your own medication.
So how much does that cost you in a month?
Roughly, we're looking at about $150 per session. So per month, multiply that by 8 sessions, you're looking at about $1,000.
And are you working? How are you able to afford the treatment?
No, I'm not working. I get help from friends and relatives. And at times, we are from donors.
And you said, where are you getting this dialysis treatment?
I think Zambia is the computer hospital.
And what about all those medications that you spoke about that you are taking? How much are they costing you? And are you able to access them easily?
Not quite often. That's correct. At times I do get them, at times I don't get them.
I miss my safety in the time because of the non-availability of money to buy the medication. As I said earlier on, we are looking at about 150 per session.
So how do you then manage the kidney problem?
It's very difficult. It's very spicy, and I really don't know how I'm managing it. Because as I'm saying, that at times I go, at times I miss my session because I want to have the money to go there to the diary. Like you need to pass away, I mean, the money for transport again. Like the food, you need to eat high-protein food.
So you said you're also getting assistance from donors. Which donors are these? And also, is government doing anything to help some people suffering from kidney ailments?
Not at all. Not at all. There's no money to run the program here in Zimbabwe.
But what is your wish? What would you like government to do?
I wish the government could give most of these hospitals the medication that we are crying for. Because we tend to lose so many people due to kidney failure.
And that was Jabulani Nyati, a kidney patient, speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye from Gwabalanda in Bulawayo.
Young people out there, are you concerned about the many issues that affect you and Zimbabweans in general? Rise to the occasion. Make an impact. Let your voice be heard. And let's get talking on The Connection.
We cover a range of issues that affect young people, including unemployment, health, education, politics, and much, much more.
I am Tatenda Gumbo.
And I'm Tungamili Nkomo.
And we are the hosts for your number one youth forum, The Connection. Tomorrow on The Connection, we are discussing human trafficking as 200 women are reportedly stranded in Kuwait after they were lured to the Middle East for possible employment.
To get involved, send us a message with the hashtag TheConnection on WhatsApp. The number is 001-202-465-0318.
Can you make your phone call to Charamba, the Charity Charamba, the police spokesperson? She gives you a comment.
So, but at the moment, are the police investigating it?
Yes.
So, all in all, how many players...
Sorry for that story. We'll bring you shortly. And in sports news, Zimbabwe Football Association President Philip Chiyangwa says police are expected to arrest some of the former Warriors players and others allegedly involved in a fresh national soccer match-fixing scandal. Chiyangwa says all those people allegedly involved in the scheme should be treated as criminals who wanted to destabilize Zimbabwean football. He says they are not yet certain about the number of former local players, some local people, and alleged foreign match fixers that are said to have attempted to throw a CAF match pitting Zimbabwe and Swaziland set for next weekend in Harare. Some of the suspected match fixers include former Warriors player and current ZIFA board member Edzai Kasinauyo, who has already dismissed the allegations as untrue. Former ZIFA chief executive Henrietta Rushwaya, suspected ringleader Chan Sankran of Singapore, and some Warriors players and several others. Sankran is accused of working with local and South Africans to fix matches in the ABSA Premiership as well as those of the Warriors. Rushwaya and Sankaran could not be reachable for comment as their mobile phones were not answered. Chiyangwa tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube the net is closing on most of the suspects.
Please, can you make your phone call to Charamba, the police spokesperson? She gives you a comment.
So, but at the moment, are the police investigating it?
Yes.
So, all in all, how many players are supposed to be investigated?
Not players, extras, criminals. I don't know the number. It just depends on the witnesses that are talking to the police. I'm sure whichever name appears there, they might know the number now. But I mean, certainly the matter is now in police hands.
When we talk about Zimbabwean soccer, does this not give a bad image about Zimbabwean soccer? And how are you going to get out of it?
You know what? If you commit murder, my friend, you who committed murder as the one who is going to face the news. It is not my business as to, you know, how long it takes. It takes them long. I'm done with it. I caught them. I handed them over to the authorities. That's it.
So now, looking forward, is the Zimbabwe match safe to be played, or you still suspect that there could be some, you know, match fixing?
We are playing next season with Swaziland, and they are coming to us a few days later after that.
So you are confident that the match won't be thrown by anybody?
No. We have taken enough measures now to defray criminals. I'm sure they are running for their dear lives as we speak.
So at the end of the day, how do you prevent this in the long run?
Whenever something like this happens, it happens outside of Zimbabwe, even in Zimbabwe next time. They do it from outside. The last time the whole Asia gate was some matches played in Asia and so forth and so forth. It was not about local matches.
And now then finally we are told that Zimbabwe doesn't have a law in which to prosecute these people that are suspected.
It's not correct.
Yeah, so what is it?
It's not correct.
What is the position?
There's a law. That's why I told you to ask the police. They give you full details about that. It's not correct.
Do you have a message for Zimbabweans about the issue?
For them to relax and enjoy football. It's under control.
That was Zifa President Philip Chiyangwa speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. Zimbabwe was once involved in another Asian betting scandal commonly known as AsiaGate, in which some Warriors players and technical team members were caught fixing matches in conjunction with an Asian betting syndicate. Meanwhile, Zimbabwe National Soccer Supporters Association Life President Eddie Mboma Nyatanga says all those allegedly involved in the match-fixing scandal should be arrested and prosecuted. Let's hear more from reporter Michael Kariati.
Nyatanga tells Studio 7 that the Zimbabwe Football Association erred in pardoning those who were in the first place involved in the so-called AsiaGate scandal that netted Warriors players and members of the technical team. Former Zifa Chief Executive Officer Henrietta Rushwaya, who was banned for life by the previous Kadebelede board, has been fingered as the masterminder of the current match-fixing scandal. She was not available for comment. Nyatanga says by trying to reverse what the Kadebelede Zifa executive did, the Philip Chiyangwa piloted Zifa board worsened the situation and are also to blame for the match-fixing mess that has become the talk of the international sporting family. That aside, Zimbabwe are in danger of having no team in Pan-African football as competition progresses. This follows Harare City's 2-1 defeat at the hands of Zanaco of Zambia in the first leg of the first round of the CAF Confederation Cup at Rufaro Stadium on Saturday. African football history dictates that teams which lose at home rarely progress to the next round of any competition, and Harare City are in danger of bowing out of the competition following the shock home defeat. The Harare club was trailing 2-0 before Ronald Chituyo came up with a goal, and coach Taurai Mangwiro admits that his team did not play well.
It was a game in which we didn't do as well as we expected.
Mangwiro, however, is still hopeful and optimistic that the Sunshine City boys would win the return leg in Zambia. The Zimbabweans need to score at least 2 goals without reply to guarantee themselves of qualification to the next round.
Thanks, Michael. That brings us to the end of the show. But before we go, a quick recap of today's top stories.